If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Hi, friends. This episode of Big Blue Banter is brought to you by Prize Picks. Head on over to Prize Picks and use promo code BANTER, and they'll match up to $100 on a new deposit. Thank you and enjoy.
Welcome back. It's the Big Blue Banter, New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always by my co-host Nick Filato. And tonight we're doing what we've done in previous years. We're grading the rest of the NFC East and their draft classes. How did the Giants' foes compare? How did their bitter rivals compare? Did they get better? Did they get a lot better than us? Did they get worse than us? How did this new GM and regime go in Washington? It's the same one in Philly. It's the same one in Dallas. And Lord knows, Nick, I wish there was no Will McClay. Alive and no, not alive.
Jeez,
that's crazy. I wish there was no Will McClay as a no, I don't want to kill this guy's job either. I wish he had a job with another team in the AFC running there their draft. If Jerry Jones ran that Cowboys draft, it would be just as bad as Jerry Jones managing the rosters, managing everything. We would have had
Did you see Jonathan Brooks
in round one?
You see what happened with the Jonathan Brooks situation? Not to cut you off. It was so funny. After the first day of the draft, Jerry Jones is doing his post day one presser with Will McClay and his son and Mike McCarthy. And all four of them are sitting in front of the Dallas media. And one of the reporters asked Jerry Jones about Jonathan Brooks. And he went on this long, just gushing. He was the best interview we've ever had. He is such a high character individual. And he's going on. And then his son like kind of hits him and like they start joking around. And he's like, we absolutely love Jonathan. He's very, very high on our board. And he was going on about how much he loves Jonathan Brooks.
Give some kind of assessment about Jonathan Brooks as an NFL prospect and how his recovery is coming from ACL surgery.
In my 30 years, I thought it was the best interview that I've ever interviewed with a player. He's outstanding. And he's just outstanding. And he's a great football player. We got him high. And he's a good player.
I'm showing the board.
Well, I got it in here. That's obviously one of the roughest times of being in athletics is coming off an injury, but he's a good player.
And one of several great players that are still left in this draft.
Well, day two comes around. Carolina Panthers jump the New York Giants, ironically enough, and then select him about 10 picks before the Dallas Cowboys take him. And it's just one of those things. Like, bro, you're telling everybody, you're not picking for quite a while, Jerry. Yeah, you're telling the entire NFL world. It's just like, oh, my God, man.
And it's he makes mistakes all the time. He's lucky as Will McClay. And that's where we're going to start, by the way. We're going to start by breaking down the Dallas Cowboys draft class. We're going in alphabetical order. We're going to break down each team's draft class in the NFCs. And then after that, we're going to give a grade. We got to give grades, Nick. We gave the Giants class a grade. So here's the Dallas Cowboys class, Nick. I'm going to go over it in the, as a whole, and then we'll go over it individually. With their first pick at 29 overall, they selected Tyler Guyton, the offensive tackle prospect out of Oklahoma. When I watched him, and I watched only a very little bit of him because I didn't think he was on the Giants' radar, moved like a tight end. And I thought that was so interesting, those kind of movement skills. And I know they're looking to develop that. In round two, Marshawn Neyland, the edge out of Western Michigan. I remember hearing either from Brugler or one of those guys before the draft, he was a sleeper to maybe go in round one. He was a workout freak, like a tester freak. And people think maybe there is some upside as a pass rusher there long-term or even short-term. Round three, a player we went over in the last pod, Nick, Cooper Beebe, the interior offensive lineman out of Kansas State. Then in round three, they had another draft pick, and they took Maris Leofu, the linebacker out of Notre Dame. No shot, I pronounced that right. And in addition to that, Nick, I barely knew who this was, and that's on me. I'm just not going to learn every draft prospect every year. It's an impossible thing to do with everything going on, but I had heard of him, but I did not do any research on him. So you're going to have to tell me about him. And then Kalen Carson in the fifth round at Wake, a corner. Ryan Flourney, a wide receiver, in the sixth round. Nathan Thomas, interior offensive lineman, in the seventh round. Justin Rogers, interior defensive lineman. Two big boys, one 6'5", 334. The other 6'3", 346. Defensive lineman, Justin Rogers, in the seventh round. So I don't know where you want to start with this. If you want to break down individual picks or you want to just talk as a whole to start.
I think we just talk as a whole. I'm not going to have extensive film analysis on every single pick that was selected by the NFC East, but I can just talk about the theory of what these teams were doing. I'll be fully transparent with Dallas Cowboys. This was my least favorite draft in this division. I do appreciate investing in the offensive line and investing in the trenches, especially when Tyron Smith, who has been one of the faces of your franchise, is now a New York Jet. You have Tyler Smith, who is killing it down there, but you needed another tackle prospect. Guyton, I think he grew up a Dallas Cowboys fan. Probably was another reason why he was selected by Jerry Jones and company. But you could see the upside. Tyler Guyton, he could start year one. We didn't think Tyler Smith was going to be able to, and Tyler Smith bumped around from guard to tackle. Yeah. Tyler Guyton can start in year one. He's just got a lot of upside and movement skills, and he's the type of guy who's probably just going to hit for them. Still a little bit raw from what I see. Nealon, though, man, he plays with his hair on fire. I haven't seen a ton of his tape. Everything that I have seen from Marshawn Nealon plays with his hair on fire. He's going to be able to play across from DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons. So when you look at this draft, I look at those two picks and then Cooper Beebe, and I'm like, damn it. Cooper Beebe is one of my favorite players. He's really good interior offensive lineman. I think they're going to try to play him at center. Well, he wasn't at the Senior Bowl, but I want to say he's tested out at center in private workouts and looked functional for whatever that's worth. But we know he played tackle, guard, very versatile. Good run defender, heavy dude. We've talked a lot about Cooper Beebe, short arms. So get him matched up against Dexter Lawrence, and we can have Dexter Lawrence just keep him at bay, hopefully. But I don't mind those first three picks. After that, look, I don't really have a lot on Liafau, the Notre Dame linebacker. Kalen Carson, I watched a decent amount of for a fifth round pick. That's solid, has some tackling issues, but has a lot of ball production, is just kind of an annoying player in coverage, can play apex, can drop and play safety sometimes, can play outside. When you combine him in this defense, you're probably going to see him all over the place on the back end. I think I gave him like a fifth round grade. So the value, I guess, kind of matches up for a guy like Kalen Carson, but I liked Malik Mustafa, his teammate at Wake Forest, so much better than him. And then I don't have anything on Nathan Thomas or Justin Rogers. So Ryan Flourney, the Southeastern Missouri State kid, was in college for a bunch of seasons, played at three different schools. This is going to be the special teams annoying player who's going to compete with Kevontae Turpin, because he's like a really good athlete. I know he's like 25, or he's going to be 25 in October. I don't think he ever had over 1,000 yards receiving in a given season. Scouting combine, he had the fastest GPS time in the drills. So someone who was very smooth, he's actually operating as a football player, running drills and backpedaling and pivoting and things of that nature. And he tested well too. So I think that might be the sneaky pick that's going to be annoying on day three. But overall, I didn't love the Dallas Cowboys draft haul.
So do you want to give a grade now and then I'll go into mine, or do you want to wait?
Sure. I'm going to give them a C.
Okay. Average. C is average. Yes. And remember, Nick is a very hard grader in general. So earlier when he said on the last podcast that Theo Johnson got a second round grade for him, that made me even more excited about Giants draft pick, fourth round pick Theo Johnson. Because second round for Nick. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off. He's also like a strange evaluation because you have to kind of look at what Penn State was doing and say, well, they really never used him in this manner. So they never used him to his potential.
Right. Penn State didn't use him to his potential. They didn't make him a big part of the offense. They didn't design first reads for him. In addition to that, he had bad quarterback play. I know people like Aller. I hope Aller can be good. He's got physical tools, but his tape was really ugly last year. Really, really uglier than you'd even imagine. I've watched a lot of Theo Johnson before the draft, and I went back and rewatched games and found a couple games that I hadn't seen. There are just a lot of bad reads from Aller, and then again, just missed off-target throws. So again, there's a lot of projection there. But as far as the Cowboys go, the way I look at this draft holistically, Nick, I think it was a big projection draft for them. I think it was project traits, athleticism, and let's see how our coaches can do with them. Even from their very first major capital swings here, Tyler Guyton is a player who's pretty damn raw from what I've heard and from what I've seen. Like, movement skills are there, but you may not be getting somebody who can start right away in year one, and you may be getting somebody who has a chance to develop if you buy into your coaches, but could also end up being maybe a bust or somebody that you're talking about kicking inside at some point because he can't handle tackle. There's not a lot of production there, I would say. There's not a lot of great tape at the position yet. He just hasn't played the position that much yet. And that leads to, you know, can he do it? Sure. Will he do it? There's no guarantee. Marshawn Nealon, you talked about, he plays with his hair on fire. He tested well. But I look at it, and he didn't dominate in the MAC conference. So something's a little bit off there with Marshawn Nealon for me, right? Because if you're got great testing, you play hard, everybody seems to like you as a projection, but so far you haven't been able to dominate the MAC conference offensive tackles. Am I just going to believe that you're going to get to the NFL and dominate NFL level offensive tackles? Maybe they got good coaching there too. They turned Micah Parsons into a great player, but Micah Parsons was also an unbelievable talent, like insane level blue chip talent. So Nealon, I think, is a really interesting pick to me. If I'm going to see like a potential bust in his draft class, I can easily see him being that, a guy who doesn't dominate the MAC and then rises that far. Cooper Beebe is a guy we liked a lot, so I'm not going to knock them for that pick, but you mentioned the short arms. I don't think he's any kind of guarantee. And after you get past that, there's a lot of players, again, mostly fifth, sixth, seventh round picks, and then the linebacker out of Notre Dame. Some projections there and some dart throws there. So the fact that there are two major capital swings here to me are both players that may not contribute right away. And then, yes, they could contribute and be, I guess, you know, breakouts is the hope later down the line. I'm not so sure that's a guarantee. You're putting a lot of weight on the coaching and the development of these players in a league that doesn't really help from a developmental standpoint in my mind, unless you get on the field. And we'll see if Guyton kind of get on the field in year one. So for me, Nick, this is going to get a C plus this draft.
With Nealon, I find it interesting because Mike Zimmer is now their defensive coordinator. You're going to have right. a lot of even front, and it's a pretty solid rotational rusher with Micah Parsons, and at least has the upside to be more than that, and DeMarcus Lawrence. And they also have Sam Williams, still the Ole Miss kid from a couple of years ago, on that roster. I think he fits what Mike Zimmer likes to do. Mike Zimmer wants to attack, man. That's what right. Mike Zimmer does. He's an attacking. It's going to be fire zone. It's going to be all those things being so thrown right at Daniel Jones. The linebacker is going to be in the A gap. And I wish I had more on the, because some of these grades, I don't want to say take him with a grain of salt, but I didn't watch a lot of that linebacker. So he could be a great player
right.
for all I know. I
or
know
a great fit for that system.
Or yeah. a great fit for that system. Overall, I did come away just looking at holistically this draft class. I think you nailed it with the developmental high swing type of picks. If they don't reach their ceiling, you might look at this draft class 2-3 years from now and say, what was Jerry Jones doing there?
And I think it's fair to say this, Nick, if you're going to go the opposite route of, you know, people of what people Joe Shane have accused Joe Shane of, you could say that they didn't draft for need, because they really didn't. They drafted line play here, plays, you know, an edge rusher and a tackle, two end of line of scrimmage players who can develop, but they needed a wide receiver. In my opinion, I guess Brandon Cooks is an okay too, but he's getting older. I think they needed another weapon on the outside.
They needed
there.
A running back.
They needed a running back. They needed a wide receiver. You know, they had other needs that they just didn't address in this draft. So he really didn't draft for needs. He drafted developmental guys that they're high on, that they believe the coaching staff can bring the best out in. It's possible. We might see it happen, Nick. But to me, this wasn't the best draft class. I wasn't as high on Nealon as the rest of them. Again, I just don't love that he didn't dominate, not just statistically, like were the sack numbers good, but the pressures and the pressure rate in the MAC conference, because it's just not a great conference. You should be a little bit better for where he was drafted. Like if it was like, you know, a little bit of a later draft pick, I would have.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Been okay.
What's going on, Big Blue Banter listeners? I'm excited for the football season for several reasons. And one of those reasons is Prize Picks, which is North America's largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform. And it's so simple to use. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including professionals, sharks, and people who are going to exploit you, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections, and you just watch the winnings roll in. It's very simple to play and gives you a little extra skin. I've set my picks in less than 60 seconds. There are so many stats to choose from, and the withdrawals of funds are easy and quick. Dan and I will be adding a segment to our show before every game where we pick our favorite stats, more or less yards or touchdowns, what have you, and we'll be discussing why from a scheme, matchup, and game theory perspective. I love their promotions and how easy their interface is to operate at Prize Picks. I may select more on tackles for a loss from Bobby Okereke or Kayvon Thibodeau next game. They also do other sports as well. It's a really cool experience. Please join Dan and I in the fun of Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. You will not regret it. You ever feel sluggish or out of focus? Are you stressed? Has your digestive system caused discomfort or flatulence like a certain co-host on this podcast during a live stream? If so, you should check out AG1. When I started drinking AG1 daily, I could feel a real difference in my daily health. I had more energy, I was better off at the gym, and I could focus on my work in a much more efficient manner. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Not only did I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I recommend AG1 to all my family and friends because AG1 has a team of doctors and scientists that formulate around the latest science and maintains high-quality standards within the industry. Even my friends have started drinking AG1, and they always tell me how energetic they feel and how it's helped them out at the gym, and also it's helped them manage their stress levels. That's why we're happy to have AG1 as our partner. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to drinkag1.com/banter. That's drinkag1.com/banter to check it out. Our mental and physical well-being is of the utmost importance. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all need to take that very seriously. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Big Blue Banter podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New York, New Jersey, Arizona, if you will, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/banter to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/banter. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, include EE system.
All right, let's move to the next team here. It's the Philadelphia Eagles, Howie Roseman. And before you set this draft class up and break down the players, I'm going to give you all the names, Nick. You have to understand, this is the most trades on draft day by any GM in the history of the NFL.
Howie Roseman. It's tied for the most.
Was it 9? Was that the total?
I think it was 8.
He made 8 draft day trades. And in the process, as part of this draft class, and it's going to go into my grade, and I'm sure it's going to go into Nick's, he, as part of the draft class, he picked up a ton of assets for next year. They have a lot of extra draft picks now next year by trading back and by doing those things. Despite all of that, he traded up at one point, which we'll talk about in round 2. And he moved and maneuvered up and down and getting picks for next year. And in the end, the class is this: Kenyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, Jalix Hunt out of Houston Christian, that's pick 94 at the end of round three. DeJean was pick 40 at the beginning of round two. And Kenyon Mitchell was pick 22 at the end of round one. Then Will Shipley, the running back I loved out of Clemson in the fourth round. Anaya Smith, the wide receiver Matt Wallman loved and called the biggest sleeper in the class in the fifth round. Jeremiah Trotter Jr. in the fifth round, who I also loved. Trevor Keegan in the fifth round. Somehow Johnny Wilson is on this draft class. That's at 185 overall, the wide receiver slash tight end slash whatever out of Florida State. And then Dylan McMahon, the interior offensive lineman at NC State, with their final pick at 190 in round six. So I'll let you start, Nick. What are your thoughts on what they did, this draft class, individual players?
Yeah, it's really good, and I hate it. I hate the fact that they always kill the draft, because if I looked at the Philadelphia Eagles roster before this draft class and I said, they're going to go cornerback because Darius Slay and James Bradbury are over the hill. They're long in the tooth. They're old, okay? They need cornerback help. So they'll probably address that with their first pick. Maybe they'll get Kenyon Mitchell, but he'll probably go before that.
Right.
Kenyon Mitchell falls to them. Sweet. They got Kenyon Mitchell, but you know what? Cooper DeJean, he might have been a better fit. And then in the second round, Cooper DeJean just decides to fall. And they trade up and they select Cooper DeJean. So now you insert Cooper DeJean and Kenyon Mitchell into this secondary. And it's just an influx of youth and speed and toughness and run support and smart and ball production and all this shit that I look at. And I'm like, damn it, Philadelphia. Damn it, Howie Roseman. Like, what the hell? So that's what I think about the first two picks. Then you get the Jalix Hunt. And it's just, I'm just going to bet on athletic ability, explosiveness, burst. I mean, this is somebody who was at Cornell, transferred to Houston Christian. So small school guy, but a lot of draft nicks were onto how high his ceiling is because of just the incredible mixture of athletic ability. He ran a 4.64, had a 1.6 10-yard split. He had a 10.8 broad and 37.5 vert at 6'4", 252 pounds. So it's a solid size, not huge, but almost 35-inch arms. 82 3/4-inch wingspan. Oof. Yes, very long. When you think about the Philadelphia Eagles, you think about Brandon Graham and guys who are getting a little bit old. They got Milton Williams, who's another just athletic freak on their defensive line. They had Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis. Now you're going to throw him into the mix as well to kind of rotate. They bring in Bryce Huff from the Jets. They just got a scary front of very athletic, high ceiling type of players for Vic Fangio to work with, because that's what we got to realize now. Their coordinators are Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore. That kind of brings me to Will Shipley. Will Shipley is a receiving back. Now, he can be a running back, you know, uses his vision and everything, but he's mostly known for being a good receiver out of the backfield. They bring in Saquon Barkley, and it's like, well, Jalen Hurts never throws to the running back. Well, look at Kellen Moore with the Chargers, right. And then look at him when he was with Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard and the Dallas Cowboys. So he's running back a lot. So we're going to see some more Saquon Barkley getting the football in his hands with that big contract that he has. And I think Will Shipley is going to be a competitive back to push Kenneth Gainwell for snaps while also operating on special teams. And I know Will Shipley, and I'm going to pass it over to you right now, because I know Will Shipley was your guy, but I think you're going to see him catching some footballs this year in this offense. You're going to see a little bit more of check downs if a lot of teams are playing too high, because you have Saquon Barkley now on this roster to complement Devonta Smith and AJ Brown.
Yeah, and I think personally from the film I watched of Shipley at Clemson, I think his running style is actually a perfect fit for the Eagles' run game too, as well, given where their offensive line is at, how many move players they have on the offensive line, and the athleticism they have. Because I don't think my whole thing with Shipley was, yes, I love how he is a receiver. I think he's a really underrated runner. I really do believe that. I watched him and I was like, I don't understand why people don't like this guy as much as they do. So I think Shipley's going to make an impact there sooner. And then, as I said, I mean, do you want to get into those final picks, or do you want me to get into my thoughts on this class?
Look, Anaya Smith.
Yeah, I'll bounce back.
All right. Yeah. I think Trotter, that is a pure legacy pick. I think he's undersized, tough. He'll be a special teamer. I actually watched Trevor Keegan just through watching J.J. McCarthy, and I felt like he was probably a lesser version of Ben Bredesen. Now I'm getting really lazy because I compared Zach Zinter to Ben Bredesen with a little bit more upside. But I think Trevor Keegan is like a lesser version of that, just to be a lazy helmet scouter. Pillar me. I hate myself. Whatever. Anaya Smith, I haven't watched him. I heard he's a speed type of threat, and he'll compete in the slot for some snaps, but I haven't gotten my eyes on him, so I won't opine there. And then there's Johnny Wilson, man. I don't have anything on Dylan McMahon, the North Carolina State kid, but Johnny Wilson, round six, pick 185. We've seen Howie Roseman take these developmental players and try to plug them to be tight ends, a la a Tyree Jackson, the quarterback out of Buffalo a couple years ago, who ended up on the New York Giants. I think Johnny Wilson might have that in his repertoire. But I look at this tight end room, I'm not even certain if Johnny Wilson cracks the roster. I love the upside. I think he's very fluid for a guy of his size, and he tested very well too. He's going to compete with what? Devontae Parker for a role possibly. Like, I'm wondering if Devontae Parker thought he was secure in his spot on this roster, and he probably is, but with these two wide receivers who are both day three, late day three guys, you have Paris Campbell coming, who's a different type of player. It's kind of a loaded wide receiver room behind Devonta Smith and AJ Brown. Britton Covey, they really liked last year. Yeah, Britton Covey was the guy that they really liked last year. So it's interesting, but when you're that big and you're that athletic and you're on a team that typically is very smart, I think they're going to find a role for you. So I hate the fact that Johnny Wilson ended up going to Philadelphia.
Yeah, there's a lot of I hate the facts about this Philadelphia draft class as a Giants fan. I mean, I'll start with my evaluation at the top. I think they got the two best defensive backs in this entire class. I think we'll look back on it and we'll say that, with Kenyon Mitchell being the best corner in this class and Cooper DeJean being the best whatever in this class. I actually like Cooper DeJean better than every defensive back in this class. I don't know where they'll use him. They might use him as their slot nickel defender. They might use him as a safety. They might use him as an outside corner at times, especially within that system. I just know what I saw. I saw how smooth he was in and out of his breaks. I feel like this player is the best playmaker on the defensive back position in this entire draft class, and I don't understand how he fell to 40. I think it was ridiculous that he fell to 40, but the Eagles obviously felt that way too, because they don't make a lot of trade-ups, and they did decide to trade up here. And it usually, if they're going to trade up, it's like for a spot or two. They went hard on this trade up. It didn't matter because they got the picks back. So I think they got the two best defensive backs in the class despite picking at 22 overall. That's crazy to me to begin with. Then you talk about Hunt. Hunt was a former safety. Like, I love that they're taking this guy who's a former safety and they see the upside. And what have we seen with this edge room for the Eagles? They've developed Hassan Reddick. Was his bad? Like, yes, he broke out a little bit before he came to the Eagles. He was a much better player with the Eagles. They're going to do the same thing with Bryce Huff. He was a great player with the Jets. You know, not an every down player. When he gets the Eagles, he's going to fit that system well. I think Hunt will develop there. I talked about Shipley. I think he's better runner on tape than people realize. Anaya Smith, I didn't get a chance to watch, but Matt Wallman, who I really like and trust, we had on the show, said this was his best sleeper in the entire class, the most underrated receiver on tape in the entire class, and probably somebody who's going to help them in the new kickoff rules. Jeremiah Trotter, I'm higher on than you are, Nick. I don't think he's like going to be the next Bobby Okereke or like great inside linebacker. I just think he has instincts and traits for that position that don't show up always when it comes to the testing or his arm length and things like that. And I just think overall, I trust, maybe I'm trusting the bloodline a little too much. But again, I go back to some of the games I watched of him and I was like, this is not like an undraftable player. He's not a first round talent like he was projected to be last summer, this time or whatever, but he's definitely not to me a round five pick. And then finally, Johnny Wilson. Like, I agree, the hand, like what people say, like the hands aren't great. I watch. He's not the best. He's not a hands catcher. He has issues there. But like, for somebody to fall to 185 at 6'7", 230 with actual wide receiver skills that are pretty obvious. You just can watch like one game on tape and see it if you just want to take a look. And he tested well. I just don't really understand that. I didn't understand the Johnny Wilson drop at all. I think a lot of teams are just like, we don't know where to put this guy. Kudos to the Eagles for being like, we'll figure out where to put this guy and how to use this guy. And we understand that he has some skill set that the players were getting at 185 overall. No one has anywhere close to this skill set. That's the key factor there. Like, you're not losing out on anything there. Pick 185. You potentially are gaining a lot. And that's like the theme of Howie Roseman. He does that all the time in drafts. He understands those situations. Then when you add the last factor in, Nick, which is how many draft picks he accrued for next year, despite having this class, to me, this is an easy A-plus class for me.
It's an A-plus class for me as well. I think with Johnny Wilson, we talked about this with Cy, the upside, the ceiling of Johnny Wilson, and I don't think he quite has this because the player I'm about to name, I do believe is rare, and I think Giant fans forget that because of last season, Darren Waller. Right. That's like the ceiling, right? Now, it might be closer, though, to the name that's at the top of the comparison.
To Hakeem Butler, right.
To Hakeem Butler.
And but it's pick 187. Who cares?
That's my point. Yes. But it's pick 187. That's the floor, Hakeem Butler. And for those who don't know who Hakeem Butler is, he was an Iowa State wide receiver that came out in the 2019 draft class. And draft Twitter absolutely loved Hakeem Butler. Yes. He was like ranked as like the number fourth wide receiver. And there were a couple guys who were like, nah, man, he's a little bit too stiff. I think Johnny Wilson has a little bit more flexibility than Hakeem Butler, but Hakeem Butler ended up getting injured. He was on the Cardinals, ended up fading out. And I'm not even certain if he's in the league or what he's doing these days. But that's the floor for Johnny Wilson. I'm betting on that all day.
Yeah.
In the sixth round of the draft.
I know.
99th percentile arm length, 99th percentile wingspan, 97th percentile weight, 99th percentile height with an 86th percentile broad jump and a 69th percentile vertical jump at the wide receiver position. 6'7", 237 pounds or whatever the hell he ended up testing out as. 231 pounds. Bits get away from being a tight end. I'll take that. A-plus for the Philadelphia Eagles, unfortunately.
Yeah, usually these guys that have the prospect Nick just described have horrible tape. He doesn't even have horrible tape. That's the craziest part. Like, he wasn't really that bad.
And he was playing with Jordan Travis.
Playing with Jordan Travis in a bad passing offense. Like, that one scares me. And the Eagles draft, as usual, scares me. This one gets an A-plus for me. Now let's go to the last one. This one's the worst one for me to discuss, Nick, because I had grown accustomed to the Washington Commanders being the joke of the division. Now, some would argue with us right now and say, what? You guys cover the Giants. The Giants have been such a much bigger joke than you guys are giving credit for over the last 10 years. And Giants have kind of been becoming a joke.
Here's a mirror, Dan. Look in it.
Yeah, we're looking right in the mirror. But I just always counted on some really bad draft classes from Washington. No forward thinking, nothing of interest, nothing really to worry about. And then it typically panned out that way. Like, their roster going into this new regime does not look that good to me. It's changed a lot from free agency in this draft, but going into things, it did not look that good to me. They had some really talented receivers. They, to me, are on a complete rebuild of the offensive line, with the exception of maybe one player. D-line, they traded away one of their better players. They still have talent there. Corners, who knows? Like, they did not like the development of what's his name in year one, the kid from
Emmanuel Forbes.
Safety, they didn't love the development there with the kid they got out of Illinois. That wasn't a great jump for year one. Both those guys kind of struggled. Linebacker Jamin Davis has not lived up to his first round draft capital at all. It's like, they don't have much going into it, and that's because of this past regime and all the bad drafts they've had. Now I'm starting to worry a little bit, Nick, because I really like this Washington football draft class. I'm going to go over it right now, names wise, and we're going to get into it and what you think. But first round, second overall, they take Jaden Daniels, the quarterback at LSU, the Heisman Trophy winner. We've gone over him a bunch. More boom bust, I think, in my mind than some other evaluators' mind. But boom clean. Is certainly there.
But clean.
Right, mm-hmm. Clean thrower, clean throwing motion, clean base, not a lot of issues from the mechanical footwork stuff like we talked about with like a May that needed to be, you know, ironed out. So in Nick's words, I think what you're saying there by clean is he could hit the ground running potentially as a thrower. Yes.
Now, he needs to protect himself, really.
If he protects himself.
And he needs to just use the middle of the field a little bit more, which I think is in his wheelhouse. He just didn't necessarily have to at LSU. But he also has some issues. I mean, we talked a lot about it, but the issues with handling pressure, how is that going to manifest at the next level would be a concern if I'm a Washington fan. But overall, I'd be excited about that draft pick.
Sure. Round two, 36 overall, Johnny Newton. This was a first-round player. He should have went in the first round. He's a D-tackle. I guess that's the reason he didn't go. But this, in my mind, was the best upside interior pass rush prospect in this entire class, as far as just pure interior pass rushing goes. You watch some of these reps that he had at Illinois. He's just dominating these offensive linemen, absolutely destroying them. And I don't think it's just upfield rusher with him. I feel like he has good pad level. I think he's got a chance to maybe not an elite run defender, but a good run defender, in addition to just offering a different level of juice for a 295-pounder as a pass rusher. I think he should have been a first rounder. They get him at 36. Then they trade back out of that spot where Cooper DeJean was picked and pick up two second round picks. And to me, that's the problem. They made the most of them, dude. They took Mike Sanristal at 50 overall, the corner out of Michigan, who was a my guy. I love this kid, the former wide receiver. I think he's going to be a perfect fit for that specific system. And then Ben Sinnott at tight end at 53. Now, I will say this. If you ask me, Nick, I would much rather have Theo Johnson at 107 than Ben Sinnott at 53. But I had Ben Sinnott graded. I had Theo Johnson as my tight end too, because I love projection. But I had them like a 2A, 2B is how I had them. So it was a slight nod, and I can understand why people would have Sinnott over him. And very, very almost identical athletic profile to Sam Laporte of Ben Sinnott. I don't think he's going to be as good of a player personally, but who knows? That would be a great fit for them. But this is a great prospect for them, right? Like, we talked about him in our show. Then they come back with their third round pick and they take Brandon Coleman, the offensive tackle out of TCU. Then they get another my guy at 100, one of the last picks around three, Luke McCaffrey, the wide receiver out of Rice. Then on day three, they have two fives and a seven. They get Jordan McGee, the linebacker at Temple, Dominique Hampton, the safety out of Washington, and then Javonte Jean-Baptiste, who I thought might go a little earlier and ended up going all the way in round seven, the defensive lineman out of Notre Dame. So what are your thoughts on this draft class?
Ah, dude, they absolutely killed it. Look, Jaden Daniels, the draft class is going to be judged by Jaden Daniels if he hits or if he doesn't hit. I think that you should be excited if you're a Washington Commanders fan right now. You got a professional. We've talked a lot about Jaden Daniels. We have an episode about Jaden Daniels. If anybody wants to hear our thoughts on that, go back and listen. I hate the fact that Johnny Newton fell to pick 36 and you put him in a room with Daron Payne. Put him in a room with Jonathan Allen. They have Fedarian Mathis, second round pick from 2022. It's just a deep defensive line room for Dan Quinn. Johnny Newton arguably was the best defensive lineman in this draft. I think Byron Murphy, the Texas kid, was a little bit better. I had him graded a little bit higher, but I really liked Johnny Newton's tape, and I was really hoping he was going to fall to the New York Giants. You nailed it with San Rastil and Sanaa. I think both of those guys are going to be immediate contributors. I think Sanaa is going to be a similar. I know it's not a one-to-one comparison, but kind of like a Chris Cooley, to be lazy again, and to compare him to a Washington Commander F move type of tight end, can do it all, and he'll be a safety blanket for Jaden Daniels. And of course they get Brandon Coleman because they need a tackle help. They need a tackle help, and they got Brandon Coleman, who has gigantic hands and who has all the length that you need, and he plays like just an absolute shit brick house and runs dudes over, and you absolutely love that. So I think there's a lot of upside there, and he might be what? I'm trying to think of the tackles that they have. They brought the kid in.
Might
from,
have a shot to
from
play.
They brought the kid in from the Chiefs. I think that was last year, right? Andrew Wiley. Yep. And now who else is their tackles? Cornelius Lucas is still on that team, but I don't really know who else would start. So I think he's going to be their left tackle, and you got him in the third round. Now it might be a little bit rough going up against Brian Burns for him initially and Kayvon Thibodeau, hopefully. But that's still a good pick with your fourth pick in the draft class. And then after that, we have Luke McCaffrey. You've sung his praises. And I think these two fifth-round picks are just interesting because you have Dan Quinn. What does Dan Quinn love to run? Sub packages. He loves big, physical, long safeties. Dominic Hampton, the kid from Washington, I think he used to be a cornerback, if I'm not mistaken. He's going to be used in these exotic sub packages that Dan Quinn loves to use. And Jordan McGee out of Temple, the linebacker, is a fast, rangy linebacker. Not all that physical, but again, going to have a role in third and six plus, and he gets to learn behind Bobby Wagner. So both of those players, I think that's good value on day three for the defense that they're going to employ there in Washington. And then Javonte Jean-Baptiste, I think he was an Ohio State kid who ended up going to Notre Dame, a little bit of a stiff player, but a functional one who can play on early downs and maybe work into a rotation while also offering some value on special teams. But overall, got to give this draft an A+.
I think for me, I forgot to give a grade. I'm a little bit lower. I would go A- for this probably because my only qualm with it, Nick, is, and I don't want to go be a needs-based guy, but I still have a lot of question marks about their offensive line after this draft. And I think they did good value. And I like Bensonat a lot, but Bensonat at 53, while I like him a lot, and I think he could end up proving, oh, it doesn't even matter where he was drafted. This guy's one of the better players in the NFL at the tight end position. I could see that as a scenario. I think at 53, you're kind of being like, this is my guy. We love him. We don't want to miss him. And we're taking a little bit of a projection leap there at 53. Personally, I think that. And that's not to say you can't get to that projection, but I haven't seen it fully there yet, personally. And again, when you're getting like a Theo Johnson at 107 type, I just feel like there's a little bit of a loss there in value, maybe. But it's just given the state of their line, because you brought it up before. I mean, they have like Samuel Cosmi, who might play guard. He's been okay. Tyler Badish, if they have to play him at center, that's not great, right? Coleman might have to originally slot in as a starter at left tackle. They still have Braden Daniels, who I liked last year. I thought they'd kick him inside. Ricky Stromberg, like those types of players. So I still think there's a lot of work there, but I don't want to say they should have drafted for need. I just don't necessarily know if I love Sanaa at that value. But those first four players are all great. I mean, those first five players really are all potential could be contributors for them going down to Coleman. So I'm going to change. I'm going to give him an A because I also like Luke McCaffrey a lot. I'm going to say I like the first six picks. That's enough to get an A.
I know you were a big fan of Luke McCaffrey. I thought it was a little early though, which makes me kind of want to come off of the A+. It's just, I love the idea of getting your starting quarterback. You get him a weapon in Sanaa. And if you want to think McCaffrey is that type of weapon that's going to work into this rotation that includes Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Dyami Brown, Dax Milne, if you want to look in that direction too, like might be the deepest in the division other than maybe Philadelphia. Actually, I don't even know, because Philadelphia, they have the top two studs. Washington's top two studs aren't as talented or as high end as Philadelphia's top two studs, but Washington has some solid players behind him with Dyami Brown.
You know who's in the mix now? Malik Neighbors, Jalen Hyatt, Wandell Robinson, and Darius Slayton.
I was setting it up. The New York Giants, baby. But But I did think it was a little bit early for Luke McCaffrey. But I know you're a big fan of Luke McCaffrey.
I like him a lot. I think he's only going this late because of how new he is to the wide receiver position because he played at Rice. I love what it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So the one reason why I agree. I think Theo Johnson at 107 is such a better value than Ben Sinnott as early as he went. Was it 53?
53.
But I think Ben Sinnott is going to work so well with Jaden Daniels. And you need to give Jaden Daniels his guy. You know, so
he's such a good fit for that skill set. That quick release right over the. Yeah. We'll see what happens there. But I'll go up to an A there. You're an A plus. So not a great sign if you're a Giants fan that we gave out these high grades. We gave an A and an A plus, an A plus, an A plus for the Eagles and Washington. A C plus and I think a C for the Cowboys. So maybe. But also, the reality is draft grades are nonsense. We are probably going to be wrong. No one knows how to get these right. Projection is such a key factor. Some of these guys are going to get injured and their careers are going to get derailed because of injuries. Yeah. So there will be a lot of you idiots directed at me and Nick after this show immediately. And if anyone takes the time to go back on it, but it's a fun exercise to kind of compare where the division is at to where the Giants are at. And I like that we went through this and I came to the conclusion that, you know what? I kind of might like the Giants depth at the wide receiver position better than any team in the NFC. I'm not going to say the receivers are any team that has Devontae Smith and AJ Brown is the best receivers in the NFC East.
Yeah.
But I might like the depth a lot that the Giants have here with an alpha in Malik Nabers. So,
try making that argument to an NFC East fan that's not a fan of the New York Giants. Yeah, they will absolutely eviscerate you.
Probably not. But you know what? That's another argument for another day. Thank you to everybody listening in to the Big Blue Banter podcast. I want to send this reminder out because it's going to be up for days. You may have seen it, you may have not, but we've got some awesome film breakdowns on the YouTube page that you're either watching this or if you're listening to podcasts. Nick has done some great film reviews of the Giants draft picks. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to get to see the coach's film, which I think is going to allow you to make your own conclusions, but you're also going to get to learn it from his lens, which I think is going to help you. And the reason I think that is because I know it's helped me. I've learned a lot more football through Nick, so then you can do the same yourself. And I know you already have if you've listened to Spade. So check those out. Check out any of the content we did, the three live streams from draft night, if you want to hear some immediate reactions to those draft picks. And we're going to have more content coming your way on this YouTube page and on your podcast form if you listen to Spotify or whatever. Please make sure you hit the download button. Don't just hit play. We need that. Make sure you're subscribed both on iTunes and here. If you're subscribed, please hit the like button when you watch these videos. Even right now, if you just completed this whole video, hit like if you haven't already done it. We need it. It helps us grow and helps the algorithm. Oh, it's always about the algorithm, Sonny. I don't know where I got that from. I just made that up, and it wasn't that good. But anyway, have a great
rest of your week. Yeah, it was fine. It was fine.
The Sonny thing, what does it even mean? It was. Anyway, have a great rest of your week or weekend. We'll talk to you soon, and go Giants.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.